International African Revolution.
International recognition in the world of rock and roll. This time we are going to rock and reg. And this one is called Johnny Be Good. Keep down Jamaica close to man the field, yeah, yeah.
Uhuru, you are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, along with Melinda Francis, and we are doing Diasporic Music on Black Power 96.3 FM. That is Black Power 96, and we are heard all over the planet Earth right now. And we kick the show off with the music of Walde Samayat, a.k.a. Peter Tosh. I think as he was born, Winston Hubert McIntosh. And he did a song that was made famous by Chuck Berry. And we will be paying tribute to Chuck Berry on this particular show. And pretty soon we'll have about a half an hour of music on Chuck Berry. But I'd like to thank two people, O'Malley Ishatella, for giving us the space on Black Power 96 to do Diasporic Music. At that time he gave us the space, it was Uhuru Radio. And I'd like to thank Archie Shep for giving us the concept of Diasporic Music, music made in the West, but not of the West. And we are going to be speaking with Afia Wangaza, and we're going to be talking about International Women's Month, and as well as the missing women in Washington, D.C. And we're also going to be paying tribute to Queen Mother Moore. Queen Mother Moore joined the ancestors in 1997, and she was a huge personality on the African liberation movement. I think she was one of the only women, well, she was at the Million Man's March, but she was all over the place, and she was a real super-duper proponent, of reparations. And Melinda Francis, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well today. Yeah, it's a little cloudy and rainy here in Toronto, but I'm doing good today.
All right, we're going to be playing some music from Lauryn Hill, Moni Love, and G.C. Cameron. I've always been a big fan of Lauryn Hill. And what do you think about Lauryn Hill? What Lauryn Hill is doing in 2017?
I haven't really been updated since her last album. So what new is she coming out with? Is she coming out with a new album at all this year? I have no idea.
I don't know. I've been listening to Black Power 96, and I've been hearing a lot of sounds like uncut stuff that she did, a lot of spoken word and acoustic, pardon me, not uncut, but a lot of acoustic stuff that she's done. I think she did that a little while ago, but
she's doing another one, it sounds like.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm a big fan of Lauryn Hill. So let's listen to Lauryn Hill, Moni Love, and G.C. Cameron.
Called you again. Remember when he told you he was about to Benjamin? Yeah. You act like you ain't him, they give him a little trim to begin. Now you think you really gonna pretend like you wasn't down and you called him again. Plus when you give it up so easy, you ain't even fooling him. If you did it then, and you probably can. Talking out your neck, then you're a Christian. A Muslim sleeping with the gin. Now that was the sin that did Jezebel in. Who you gonna tell when the repercussions spin? Showing off your ass cause you're thinking it's a trend, girlfriend. Let me break it down for you again. You know I only say it cause I'm truly genuine. Don't be a hard rock when you really are a gin, baby girl. Respect is just the minimum. But you still defending them now. Lauryn is only human. Don't think I haven't been through the same predicament. That is in Philly pen. It's silly when girls sell their souls because of sin. Look at where you be in, hair weaves like Europeans, fake nails up by Koreans. Come again. And his Timbs and his women, him and his men. Come in the club like hooligans. Don't care who that you fan, Papa Yang.
Like you got yeah.
Let's stop pretend. The one that pack pissed out by the waist, man. Crissed out by the casement. Still the name of his basement. The pretty basement. Claiming that they did a bid, man. Need to take care of their 3 and 4 kids. In the face in court case when the child supports late. Money taking, heartbreaking. Now you wonder why women hate me. The sleepy silent man. The punk domestic violence man. The quick job up and stop acting like boys and be men. How you gonna win when you ain't right within? How you gonna win when you ain't right within? How you gon' win when you ain't right within? Come again. Yo, come again.
Thank you.
it is forever. There comes a time when you're at the end of your tether, and you know, I think you went far beyond that. So it was down to backtrack, attack you with an earthen vengeance as it attacks you, making sure you get the full entire view of who to blame at the end of the game. Things will never be the same, and it's a crying shame.
It's a shame.
But you don't go at all. It's a shame the way you mess around with your man. It's a shame the way you play with my emotions. It's a shame the way you mess around with your man. You're like a child on a sunny day, 'cause you play with us and then you throw it away.
Why you use me? Why you confuse me? How can you say to be so cruel? Why don't you please me from this prison where nothing has your food?
It's a shame the way you mess around with your man.
Ooh, baby, you managed to hurt me.
It's a shame the way you mess around with your man. I tried to stick with you, show your love so true. But you won't appreciate the love we try to make.
Ooh. Why do you use me? Why do you confuse me? How can you stand to be so cruel? Why don't you free me? I'm in prison. There's nothing I don't. You know you hurt me, love, the way you treat me, darling. Oh, it's a shame. Oh, the way you mess around with your man. I got love so true, and I wanna give to you. I just can't be content. I'm looking back in time.
Uhuru, you are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Richmond, along with Melinda Francis, and we just heard from G.C. Cameron. He did It's a Shame. Moni Love gave us It's a Shame, My Sister, and Lauryn Hill did a doo-wop, That Thing, and we are getting ready to listen to Gerald Alston and Blue Lovett and the Manhattans, and they're going to do a song called There's No Me Without You, and then we're going to hear a rendition by Marcia Griffiths, and Marcia Griffiths was one of the I3s, but she is known as an artist in her own right, and she is coming to Toronto this summer, I think she's coming, I'll give you information where she's coming later, but to the same place that Leroy Sibbles came, and I think Ken Booth came the last time, but it's an outdoor venue, and we will see Marcia Griffiths. But now let's listen to Gerald Alston and Blue Lovett, the late Blue Lovett. They have been on Diasporic Music many, 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 many times, but this is my good friend Gerald Alston and the Manhattans, and they're going to be doing a song called There's No Me Without You.
Baby, you are my life, and without you, I'm an empty shell. There's no house without a home. Wants to be alone. There's no child without a dream. And there's no song without a meaning. Without a plan.
Nanga Def. Nanga Def is Wolof, and they speak Wolof in Senegal, the Gambia, and Mauritania, and the Wolof diaspora all around the world. It's a greeting, and we just heard from Marcia Griffiths, and Marcia Griffiths was one of the I3s, and she's a giant on her own. She did a cover version of There's No Me Without You, a song that was done by Joe Alston and the Manhattans, and we are going to be speaking with Afia Wangaza, and Melinda Francis will introduce her.
I want to welcome Afia back onto the show, and she is the founder of the Malcolm X Center for Self-Determination, or was the founder, and current simulcast is going on at the station of WMXP 95.5 FM in Greenville, South Carolina. Welcome to the show, Afia.
Thank you. My pleasure. My pleasure.
Now, we are listening to our station is 96.3, and we are broadcasting from St. Petersburg. And I guess the major question, this is International Women's Month, so we wanted to ask you about what is taking place in where you are and how you see the whole, that whole question locally, nationally, and internationally in terms of International Women's Month.
Well, it's a kind of interesting, bittersweet feeling, frankly, having begun with the season, having begun in response to Donald Trump and the attitude being and the tone of the season of leading up to Women's History Month, as it's characterized in this country, International Women's Month, International Women's Day, extended to a month around the world. And that anti-Trump tone serving to really be a distraction to the status of women around the world. It's been shaped and controlled in this country largely by the Democrats. And as a result of that, it's been focused on responding to the various Trump tweets and repositioning of Democrats and the Democratic Party for the upcoming midterm elections. I think that that has placed women generally at a disadvantage and distracted from the status of women. As it relates to African women are among, if not the most invisible women in the country, indeed in the world. When we look at the indices of well-being in terms of access to adequate food, clothing, shelter, education, healthcare, technology, we are at the bottom at every index, whether you're talking about the richest country or countries in the world, or you're talking about the least developed countries in the world. Black women, African women, are at the bottom. And, of course, recently, in the past few days, national attention has been drawn to missing black girls in the Washington, D.C. area, which typically was dismissed by local law enforcement, which kills black people in this country every 28 hours, dismissed these young women as young women and girls as runaways and thus not worthy of investigation or pursuit, leaving the question, if they are in fact runaways, why are they runaways, and why, and are asking, why isn't their running away being investigated? We had here in South Carolina this past Thursday a little 12-year-old Liberian girl adopted by a white family, one of 10 children, apparently all adopted by this white family, who purportedly ran away. No one is asking the question, why did she run away? And as soon as local law enforcement concluded that she had run away as opposed to having been kidnapped, then they called off the search. There has been no mention of the Department of Social Services involvement. If that were a black family that had adopted a child and the child ran away, the first thing that would have happened would have been that the Department of Social Services would have taken that child into custody, not allowed that child to go back to that household until an investigation had been completed. So why is it that a black child, a Liberian child, a child who is thousands of miles away from family and familiar, is sent back into an environment that she reportedly ran away from and who had a reputation of being, quote, unquote, a little mama, taking care of all the other children in the household. She was fourth of 10, meaning that the remaining six were younger than she. So was it that she got tired of being a maid? Or was there some other things going on? Needless to say, call attention to the three drowned girls there in St. Petersburg, Florida, where the cops drove these young sisters into a lake and watched them drown. The disregard for the life of black women and girls is a crime against humanity. It is, has reached criminal and has been since we were snatched off the African continent and slammed down on the shores of the Americas, has the dignity and worth and the value of the black female been degraded. There are some reports that say that a study completed in 2014 that there were up to 64,000 black women and girls missing in the United States. I want to, before I go too much further along, I want to call the name.
Pardon me, 64,000?
Yes, 64,000.
Oh, okay.
64,000 black women and girls missing in the United States in was a statistic that was cited in a 2004 report. The young sisters who are missing, said to be missing in the Washington D.C. area, are Jacqueline Lacey, Anaya McNeil, Deshaun Wallace, Yeshaya Enoch, Talisha Coles, Morgan Richardson, Diana White, Gladys Keat, Sayana Parker, Shaquan Scott, Heaven Shemate, Unique Lucas, and Chastity Smith. So the issue is not just these young sisters who are missing and discounted on the theory, the hypothesis that they're runaways, but it is the lack of quality of life for black women in this in the world generally, but in this country in particular, as for purposes of this conversation. I don't want to overlook the young sisters in Nigeria who are still missing. There's one of those profile pictures, find our girls or bring back our girls. I think that we all need to be putting that on our profile or something equivalent to that, until our girls are brought back and the quality of life of black women are changed. There was here in Greenville, I was invited to speak at the local Solidarity March solidarity with the march, White Women's March on Washington, and I, of course, not only spoke and gave my reason for appearing at that event, speaking and marching in a White Women's March at all, was to lift up the African women who were brought into this country and into South Carolina in particular, and experimented on by Marion Sims, who is reported to be the father of gynecology, modern gynecology, Dr. Mengele for the Nazis, for the Jews, but who experimented on African women without anesthesia on the theory that we had no feelings and therefore could not feel pain, and that he is lauded and celebrated not only here in South Carolina with a statue on the State House grounds, but that there are statues throughout the country, including in New York at the Columbia Women's Hospital, as the father of gynecology, with no reference to the fact that the brutality, the cruelty, and the violence that was done to African women in pursuit of his interest. We, of course, recently, the case of Henrietta Lacks is being revived by Oprah Winfrey, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with it and how far it goes in pursuing the rights of Henrietta Lacks's estate and of her descendants and their entitlement to not only recognition of the fact that it has been her DNA, her genes, that have provided the baseline for cancer research around the world, but that they be properly compensated for the theft of her genetic material. When I raised the issue of Marion Sims on at the White Women's March here in Greenville, and later on their website, they have since blocked me from posting on their website that they don't want to deal with issues of race. They want to deal with issues of Donald Trump.
Right.
So it's I think it's important that we refocus our priorities, reorder our priorities. I'm less concerned about what white people think about us and whether or not they value us than whether we do, whether we value ourselves and each other. And along that line, on yesterday, here in South Carolina, in Columbia, every black girl incorporated held its second annual conference on the status of black girls, primarily in the state of South Carolina, although it is growing and working towards becoming a national effort. I'm their first legacy awardee, and they awarded a second legacy award on yesterday to a sister, Tawanda Mickle, who is from Columbia and of great service to the community there. So there was, as we go out of Women's History Month, an uplift of black women and girls. However, we have to make it an everyday practice and not just a matter of an annual celebration.
Afia, let me ask you. Let me. I wanted Melinda to ask you some questions. But I wanted to say that the sister that was in Black Uhuru, Puma Jones, was born in Columbia. Puma Jones was a member of Black Uhuru and the reggae group, and she was born in Columbia, South Carolina. But I wanted to ask you, we're going to do a feature on Queen Mother Moore. Could you talk about the importance of Queen Mother Moore, Queen Mother Audley Moore?
Queen Mother Audley Moore is one of the standard bearers. She held a standard of ethics and a code of conduct to which we ought all aspire, especially African women. In 1992, I organized the NCOBRA conference in Charleston, South Carolina. It was the conference that lit the fire that ignited the momentum, the popularization of NCOBRA and of the pursuit of reparations, because it was held in Charleston and because of the energy that was generated out of it. As a part of the programming, we brought Queen Mother Moore to Charleston. Queen Mother Moore, Dr. Blakely, and two I believe they were Liberian, now that I think about it. They were two Liberian children who had been with them at a session of the United Nations for an event, I believe it was the Year of the Child, Year of the African Child. And so these two children, a boy and a girl, came down to Charleston with them to participate in the activities. I was largely responsible for organizing the cultural aspects of the conference and taking advantage of the fact that it was held in Charleston, where up to 40% of the Africans brought into the United States for the purposes of enslavement were brought in through South Carolina, through Charleston. So Queen Mother Moore gave a kind of grounding, and along with Elijah Obadunio, I believe is the correct pronunciation of his last name, having both male and female energy together, both coming out of the Garvey movement, both raising up Malcolm, both advancing the issue of reparations as one of the steps towards our self-sufficiency and self-respect, self-determination, and self-defense. Both came and participated in the ceremonies there. Of course, Queen Mother Moore traveled around the world representing our interests. She kept the issue of reparations alive, and the name of Marcus Garvey in the spotlight and the consciousness of the people at all times. Her having been a member of the Garvey movement, a significant activist in that movement. She is important to us because not only did she come out of the Garvey movement, but she was a counselor to Malcolm X. She held up the point that and symbolized the principle that a nation can rise no higher than its women, and that the women are the first teachers, and that on that basis that we have a duty to always lift up our women and to secure them, and not to secure women in some Eurocentric patriarchal male supremacist notion of men have to take care of black women. Queen Mother Moore carried her own pistol, and that the day when it was necessary, when brute strength or brute force was the only source of meeting brute force, then male support was obviously necessary where we were in fewer numbers, although, as Sojourner Truth pointed out, you know, she could best any man in the field when given enough to eat. So I think that we need to begin to deal with this Eurocentric, patriarchal, male supremacist notion of the relationship between sisters and brothers and what those roles are and how they're to be played out in the real world. Queen Mother Moore she talked candidly about issues that impacted the black community, black women in particular, as it related to colorism and it related to hair. The fact that, you know, everybody's got good hair, if they got any. But the fact that hair, that what we think of as good hair and we think of as a good complexion passing the paper bag test was a evidence of the violence that had been done and continues to be done against us as a people. Having been done against us in the form of rape and being done against us in the form of our pursuit and celebration as a result of internalized white supremacy. She was very clear about that. She spoke about it often, and she challenged us to deal with it directly. She, as I said, maintained a standard of ethics and a code of conduct to which we must all aspire.
Are you listening to Diasporic Music on Black Power 96? And I know you have some questions, Melinda.
I just have in the context of the black and missing. I know there's an organization that called the Black and Missing Foundation that has been tracking numbers and all that stuff. But what it brings to me is sort of here in Canada, it's a little bit there's been a push on the grassroots, like amongst Indigenous communities, for the the murdered and missing Indigenous sisters, it has taken years on the ground to actually have a sort of a full-on I guess research project, or sisters and spirits have been pushing for investigation around those deaths. And I was just wondering, basically, the movement of actually having a full-scale, investigation around that specific issue, specifically in the U.S., and what that looks like on the ground in organizing.
Well, in that regard, Native American or Indigenous women are in better shape than we are, than African women are, because there is no such investigation. There's not even a real acknowledgement of the fact that African women are being kidnapped, murdered, raped, robbed, and pillaged. I would call attention to, I believe his name was Haltzclaw, the cop in the Midwest, who was just stopping African women and imposing all kinds of violence and abuses against them. There were 8 women that he was charged with having sexually abused, and it was only just that Barbara Arnwine and members of her staff at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law took up the case and forced the hand of the local government that he was prosecuted, an older sister, coming home from church, was assaulted by him and at gunpoint forced to perform oral sex on him. I can remember 40 years ago as a law student in San Francisco where there were black women who were disappearing in the Bay Area, and nothing being done about it. We need not disregard the children, the missing and murdered children of Atlanta. Black lives in this country do not matter, and least of all is the life of black females. We hear all this talk about trafficking. The sex trafficking, which is focused on Eastern European females, is the least of the trafficking trade. The real trafficking goes on with domestic workers, bringing people into this and other countries to perform domestic and agricultural services. And those are, especially children, wind up being Africans. There's no investigation. As I mentioned about the child, the 12-year-old here, there's no investigation being announced about the white people who adopted her and from whose home she was reported to have run away from. Other forms of lawful trafficking against Africans is the Departments of Social Services and Child Welfare that snatch our kids out of their mother's arms and take them into custody and place them, if they're lucky, with family members, but more often than not, with strangers, including non-African strangers. Another category of trafficking in our children is the Department of so-called Juvenile Justice, and the only thing juvenile and the so-called justice is in that would be considered juvenile except that it is so criminal, where we have thousands, indeed millions of our children across this country being kidnapped and held into criminal detention, sometimes even in adult facilities where they are subject to the sickness of adults who actually abuse them either as co-inmates or as persons in authority like guards and wardens and such. So, the condition and the treatment of African women, the abuse, the violence has not even been acknowledged, much less studied. And that is one of the things that we need to be calling for.
I think we have run out of time. How people can tune into your channel?
We're at WMXP 95.5 FM. We're on the internet. I'm not sure. I know we're on Shoutcast, and people have been able to get us on their phones under other of those different platforms. We are in the process of upgrading our website, which is WMXP955.com. So I would urge folk to check those out, and I can be reached at WMXP955@gmail.com. That's WMXP955@gmail.com. And our telephone number at the Malcolm X Center is 864-239-0470. 864-
Can you give me one more time?
864-239-0470. And thank you all so much for this opportunity.
And thank you. And we'll have you back again. Thank you very much.
Thanks. My pleasure.
And we have been speaking with Afia Wangaza, and we're getting ready to pay tribute to Chuck Berry.
You're listening to WhoRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
Deep down in Louisiana, across
You are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhura Radio. Norman Richmond along with Melinda Francis, and we're paying tribute to Chuck Berry. And Chuck Berry said he didn't like the term king because he said the whole question of the empire was over, and he liked to be referred to as a founding, one of the founding founders of, he didn't even say founding fathers, he said one of the founders of the whole rock and roll situation. And he mentioned other people like Little Richard, of course, and other people. But we're paying tribute to Chuck Berry, and I think I asked you this before, Melinda, but you had not seen the film Cadillac Records, had you?
I've only seen clips of it. I haven't seen the whole film, which, yeah, I've seen parts of it, like a couple of parts here and then a couple of parts there, but I haven't seen the whole film, which is, yeah, I always catch it in midway through, kind of thing.
Most deaf. Yasin Bey, I think is his name, but Mos Def played Chuck Berry in the film. We're getting ready to play a clip, but that film came to Toronto, and Beyonce had, I think she might have been the executive producer. She had a big role in the film, but it never was released in the major theaters. It played at a cinema called the Bloor Cinema, which at now it's owned by the big corporate people, but at that time it was owned by a group of an Italian family who were very, very good to the African community. We did a lot of things there, but it only showed at the Bloor Cinema and never was released in the major theaters here in Toronto. But we're going to listen to we're going to pay tribute to Chuck. We're going to have a clip of My Name is Chuck Berry. This is Mos Def, and then we're going to hear Chuck Berry sing Sweet Little 16, then we're going to go back to Chuck when he goes to jail, and then we're going to listen to Little Richard talk about Chuck Berry, and then we're going to hear Roll Over Beethoven by Chuck Berry. So this is our tribute to Chuck Berry.
Y'all can't come in here.
I'm Chuck Berry.
Chuck Berry's a country and western singer.
Is he? You know who else he is? He's me.
Says he's Chuck Berry.
Let me see some ID.
Well, all right then. ID.
This license says you're Indian. That pinup make you look like a white man. What the hell are you?
Well, I'm a musician, and my name is Chuck Berry. And I can be whatever you need me to play in your fine establishment this evening.
You part con man, too?
No.
Let's turn him loose. Ladies and gentlemen, Chuck Berry. Sweet Little 16.
They're really rocking in Boston and Pittsburgh, PA. Deep in the heart of Texas and round the Purple Bay. One by one, become so excited. Watch her look at her run, boy. Rockin' on Bang Bang, Philadelphia, PA.
No, darling, that's my song.
No, darling, that's the Beach Boys.
It's Sweet 16, note for note. Note for note, not one change, aside apart from the lyrics about the new craze sweeping the nation. The young white boys and girls surfing. I've provided them the soundtrack unbeknownst to myself.
Chuck, you ready?
Oh, yes, yes, I'm ready. I'm very ready to make more songs for the Beach Boys and all other manner of white folks to steal. Yes, I'm ready. I'm quite ready. Oh, perfect. You say the devil's name, he appears.
Yeah, we do need to talk. You heard this? You know what's going on?
You know what's going on?
I'm not laying down for this, man. First, Alan Freed gets a third of Maybelline. For what?
Chuck, I'm going to tell you.
Listen. No, no. Man, you listen to me. Did he write one part of the song? One part of the song at all?
Alan Freed put us on the map.
So this gives him the license to
take an underage white girl across the lines.
I'm not talking about girls. What's going on?
Don't say shit.
Hello, officers.
Don't say anything.
Is there a problem?
Mr. Berry, you were under arrest for transporting a minor across
I didn't transport anyone anyway. I didn't solicit anything. And okay, gentlemen, first of all, I have you know that my very good, dear friend, Mr. Jerry Lee Lewis, is a 13-year-old white. We're stopping by his home on the way. Emmett Till gets murdered for whistling at a white woman. I know you're very pleased to get Chuck Berry. Fix this, Leonard.
Ladies and gentlemen, Little Richard.
I want to say something to Chuck. Everybody else got a chance to say something. Shut up! I love Chuck. I traveled all over the country with him. He's one of the greatest entertainers I ever met, rock and roll. And don't nobody write like Chuck. He's the best writer I've ever heard of. He's a great entertainer and a great father, great gentleman. And I just love Chuck. And this is to you, Chuck. I'm all over Beethoven. Gotta hear the king today.
Ladies and gentlemen.
This is a song about a man who had a lot to do with music. As a matter of fact, a relished memory in my mind he was. And a good musician, might I say so. This man was named Beethoven. No, he was named Beethoven. Ladies and gentlemen, I ask him to forgive us. Roll over and listen to a little of this.
You're listening to Diasporic Music, and my name is, I am the son of Eliza Mae Richmond. My name is Norman, and along with Melinda Francis, and we are paying tribute to Chuck Berry. And Chuck Berry had a brother. One of Chuck Berry's brothers' name was Paul Lawrence Dunbar Berry. And I know that Sam Cooke was a Paul Lawrence Dunbar man, and Curtis Mayfield was a Paul Lawrence Dunbar man. I guess Paul Lawrence Dunbar was a great literary figure among Africans in the United States. But Melinda, did we want to talk about our folks in Portland, Oregon?
Well, I've heard that they're big supporters, so we want to do a shout out to our listeners and all those who became sustaining members of you know, Black Power 96, and yeah, we would thank to all our listeners out in Oregon.
Yes, and we're going to be playing some music from Robert Cray in the weeks to come. Robert Cray is a young blues singer, and we like Robert Cray. I think he's from Tacoma, Washington. But right now, we wanted to talk about, we're paying tribute to Chuck Berry, and we're going to talk about, we're going to turn it over to Keith Richards, and Keith Richards is going to talk about how Chuck Berry performed one of his greatest hits on him. And we're also going to hear Chuck Berry. This is the Caribbean side of Chuck Berry. In Chuck Berry did a song about just Calypso in 1954, and he did a song called Havana Moon. And we also are going to play a song by a young man by the name of Ty Hunter. Ty Hunter was from Detroit, and I was really I used to love Ty Hunter when I was growing up in Los Angeles, but at one time, the first million-selling record of all time was Harry Belafonte's album Calypso, and I'm not going to say this was African internationalism or Pan-Africanism, or I'm not going to say it was because Africans in America love Calypso. It could be a combination of both or neither one, but I know everybody was trying to get a hit, so Calypso was one time bigger, the biggest music on the planet Earth, and Africans in the United States gravitated toward it at that particular time. But first, we want to let Keith Richards talk about Chuck Berry's greatest hit.
You talk about your influences. I know Chuck Berry's a big influence on you, right?
Absolutely. Chuck was a major influence. So not just guitar playing, but songwriting. Yeah.
Everything, yeah.
You know, I mean, let's give Diane.
Yeah, I think I read in the book you said that when you heard Chuck Berry, you the sound was so good you like ate Chuck Berry.
Yeah.
It was like fed you.
I put cream on it.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, a little mustard on there. Yeah. Down a little Chuck Berry. But then I also heard the story. I don't know if this is true or not. Did he punch you in the face once?
Yes, he did.
He did. Yeah. With friends like that, yeah.
Well, you can't go wrong.
You can't
right?
go wrong. Why would Chuck Berry punch Keith Richards?
I was in a dressing room. He was doing a gig. He'd went off to collect the money, I think. And,
that's what it always is.
He was a tightwad. Bless you, Chuck. But and his guitar was laid out in his case, and I went, "Oh, come on, Keith, you know, just the touch."
You gotta play a little bit, right?
Yeah, just let me give it an E chord. Or, he walked in and goes, "Nobody touches my guitar." Boom! That's one of Chuck's biggest hits, baby.
Who make me go? I left Trinidad a few years ago, and they swept in rice the Isle of Soul. But the cuts deport for U.S. pain. Maria,
She run me away, oh Maria. Oh Maria, oh Maria. She the one who make me go. I tell everybody how it went. From her front door for me she sent. Now she calling me a good for nothing jerk. Just because me, I know work. Why she put me out to let me explain. When I work my feet and hands a pen, and me back can't stand a heavy load. Here you go, she tell me, hit the road. Oh, Maria. Oh, Maria. Oh, Maria. She the one who make me go. I've been here for a few long years and more, even by myself, a diner floor. Now you see, I be important man, but income tax, no understand. One day come man from revenue, and he tell for me what I must do. He say, pay the taxes without fail, and if I don't, I go to jail. Now please, oh Maria, take me back, cause me friend can't work the income tax. They say I no pay, I go to jail, and nobody can go my bail. Oh Maria, oh Maria, oh Maria, she the one who make me go. Maria, I come now back to home, and I work my fingers to the bone. Before you, I swim the ocean blue. I do the thing you want me to. Oh, Maria. Oh, Maria. Oh, Maria. She the one who made me go. She the one who made me go.
Since 12 o'clock, me watch the tide easing in. It's low the moon, but high the wind. Havana moon, Havana moon. Me all alone, me open the rum. It's long the wait for boat to come. American girl, come back to me. We'll sail away across the sea. We'll dock in New York, the buildings high. We find a home up in the sky. Havana moon, Havana. Sip on the rum, me wonder when the boat she come to bring me love. Ow! Sweet little thing, she rock and roll, she dance and sing, she hold me tight, she touch me lips, me eyes they close, me heart she flip. Havana moon, Havana. Still alone, me drinking the rum, begin to think the boat no come. American girl, she tell a lie, she say till then, she mean goodbye. Havana moon, Havana moon. Me lay down alone, was good the rum, me fall asleep. The boat she come, the girl she look, till come the dawn. She weep and cry, return for home. If
whistle blow. Me open me eyes, was bright as sun, was blue the sky. Me grab me shoes, me jump and run. Me see the boat head for horizon. Havana moon is gone to run. The boat she sailed, me love she gone. Havana moon.
Are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. Norman Otis Richmond and Melinda Francis, and Calypso was the big thing during that period of history, and Chuck Berry was caught up in it, Motown was caught up in it, and Ty Hunter, who sang the song Free, you could hear the phrasing and basically the influence of Calypso from Ty Hunter. Ty Hunter went on to become the lead singer, or one of the lead singers of the Originals, and he was a very, very great vocalist, and everyone was influenced by Ty Hunter, and he used to sing with this group called the Voice Masters, and David Ruffin and Melvin Franklin, the bass vocalist for the Temptations, were background singers for Ty Hunter. That's how bad, good, great Ty Hunter was. And that was our tribute to Chuck Berry. And now we're getting ready to pay tribute to Queen Mother Audley Moore.
Maybach music. Queen Mother Moore. Audley Moore was the daughter of parents Ella and St. Cry Moore, who were the children of former slaves. Moore's grandmother Nora Henry was born into slavery, the product of her mother being raped by her in slavery. Moore's grandfather was lynched, leaving her grandmother to raise five children on her own. Audley Moore was born on July 27, 1898 in New Iberia, Louisiana, where both of her parents would die before she graduated from fourth grade. She would become her family's primary caretaker as she learned how to become a hairdresser by the age of 15. In 1918, she was working as a volunteer nurse in the midst of an influenza outbreak. During World War I, she and her sisters worked in Anniston, Alabama to help create what she called the Black USO to help provide medical care and services for black soldiers. During the early 1920s, while traveling the country, she learned that racism was ingrained into the culture of the United States. It was not just the culture of the Southern states. After returning to Louisiana, she would experience a life-changing moment. She was able to hear the Honorable Marcus Garvey speak about black unity and collective black empowerment. Hearing the words of Garvey would lead her to becoming a member and eventually a leader of the United Negro Improvement Association. Moore, along with her husband and sisters, would move to Harlem, New York during the early 1920s. This is when she became active in the civil rights movement of the time. Despite repeated arrests, she organized a fought for domestic workers in the Bronx and helped black tenants fight against their white slumlords. In 1931, she participated in a march to Harlem along with the Communist Party to advocate for justice for the Scottsboro Boys. She would later become a member of the Communist Party as well as the International Labor Defense. As a member of the Communist Party, Moore became the party's representative for the New York State Assembly in 1938 and alderman in 1940. Queen Mother Moore was determined to make a difference for her people. She became a member of the National Association for Colored Women and the National Council of Negro Women. But by the 1950s, she ended her relationship with the Communist Party because it no longer supported self-determination for African Americans. Her next step was to found the Universal Association of Ethiopian Women, which was an anti-lynching group that also fought for the rights of African Americans on welfare and in prison. In 1957, Moore would present a petition supporting reparations, land, and self-determination against genocide to the United Nations. She would present a second petition in 1959. In her petition, she asked for a monetary sum of $200 billion and a returning of any African people who wanted to return to the continent. In 1963, she would form the Reparations Committee of Descendants of U.S. Slaves to further her demands for reparations. She would publish her analysis of reparations titled, Why Reparations? Reparations is the battle cry for the economic and social freedom of more than 25 million descendants of African slaves. Moore created a detailed analysis of why African people deserve reparations and how reparations could be paid out to the descendants of enslaved Africans. Moore was able to point to times in history where disenfranchised people have been paid reparations for their oppression. She was even able to provide information proving that the United States paid reparations to Japanese Americans for their mistreatment. Queen Mother Moore is most known for her international fight for reparations for African people. She was also known for her saying, reparations, reparations, keep on, keep on, we've got to win. Moore was able to mobilize and gain over 1 million signatures and present them to President Kennedy on the 100th anniversary of the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation. During the 1960s, Moore was instrumental in the Republic of New Africa's independent charter as one of the first signers of the document. This charter would help create five independent African states, which would also help in the process of creating independent African nations. She would travel extensively throughout the African continent during the 1960s and the 70s. During an Ashanti naming ceremony in Ghana, Audley Moore officially became Queen Mother Audley Moore. Her first act as Queen Mother was to help found the Eloise Moore College of African Studies, Vocational, and Industrial School in Parksville, New York. Queen Mother Moore would die in May of 1997. But before her death, she was present for Nelson Mandela's visit to the U.S. in 1990 and was one of the five female speakers at the Million Man March in 1995. She was a woman on a mission to free her people and didn't allow anything to stop her. She spent the remainder of her adult life fighting for the reparations and the rights of African people. Queen Mother Audley Moore, we proudly stand on your shoulders. For more information, please visit www.ontheshoulders1.com. That is on the shoulders, the number 1.com.
Ooh, you're listening to Diasporic Music. My name is Norman Richmond, along with Melinda Francis, and we're paying tribute to Queen Mother Audley Moore. And Queen Mother Moore was based in Harlem. I think she went to Philadelphia, then she went to Harlem, or she had some time in Philly. But I know she's spent most of her time in Harlem. And I was honored to have met Queen Mother Moore in the early 70s. I was spent a little time in Harlem, and I remember meeting Yuri Kochiyama. Well, I met everybody from the left all the way to the right, Roy Innes, who was the Roy Innes was, I guess he was a hip hop core. But Preston Wilcox, who was the person who used to give out the Malcolm X Awards, he took me, one time I remember he took me and introduced me to everybody, all the personalities in Harlem. I remember he took me to Sekulu Shakur. Not Shakur, but Sekulu was a brother from South Africa who had a record store across the street from the Apollo Theater. And he called himself a Zulu American. He was, he must have been about 6'9", maybe, and quite a character. He had a voice like Melvin Franklin or Paul Robeson, and he used to scare folks. White folks, a lot of white folks to death, but he was quite a character. I hope he's well. And Melinda, Queen Mother Moore, I guess you're not familiar with Queen Mother, I guess.
Well, I've been just reading about her, so I'm excited to hear the tribute that is going on, yeah, that we're about to play.
All right, so we're going to listen to, this is Queen Mother Moore that's going to be speaking, and then we're going to hear from Oscar Brown Jr., Bid Him In, and then we're going to hear from Walter, I said Walter Rodney, but Winston Rodney, who is the Burning Spear. He's going to sing about slavery days, but let's listen to an interview with Queen Mother Moore.
People throughout the world. Her name is Queen Mother Moore. Welcome, Queen Mother.
Thank you.
How did you become known as Queen Mother Moore?
Well, that name was bestowed upon me by the African students, first of all, as a result of my years of activities in this country. They gave it to me. And when I went to Africa, to Dr. Nkrumah's funeral, the chief heard about me, and he sent for me to come to him. And I went, and he said, I'm going to make you officially Queen Mother of the Ashanti. And he initiated me Queen Mother. But I was Queen Mother before I went to Africa.
Did you personally know the late Kwame Nkrumah?
Yes, I did. I knew him here.
Okay, you met him while he was visiting here?
Yes.
Okay, and that is in conjunction with your work?
Yes.
I understand that you sent a petition to the United Nations in, I think, 1957 for reparations for the black people in America. Explain something about that to us.
Yes, the petition called for us to go back to Africa, for those who wanted to go back. And for those who wanted to stay here, there had to be certain indemnity given for the people who wanted to stay, the people who wanted to go.
What kind of indemnity?
Well, I was asking for $200
billion. $200
billion? Dollars.
To indemnify?
Yes, for the injury that we have received. The injury as a result of our enslavement.
Okay, that's for our 400 years of enslavement?
Yes.
As reparations, we requested $200
billion. Yes. Yes.
Okay, when you sent this petition to the United Nations, what kind of response did you get?
I got a very good response. He told me that we needed a member nation to introduce the resolution, since we were not officially members of the UN.
Is this with your work with the Republic of New Africa?
No, that was not. I read as a member of the Ethiopian Women, the Universal Association of Ethiopian Women.
I understand that you founded that organization.
Yes.
And what was that organization about?
To save our men from execution. They were being executed at the rate of 2 a week almost. There was somebody being executed.
Then unjustly executed?
Yes, we thought they were unjustly executed. And we tried to save some of them. We did save some.
Mention a few.
From execution. Labat and Poret. We saved those. We saved Jenkins. We saved another brother.
There was a number of people that were saved from execution because they were unjustly charged with crimes.
Yes.
And where did this take place?
In New Orleans.
Okay, you're from New Orleans,
yes.
I understand. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also worked with Marcus Garvey.
Yes.
Tell us first something about Marcus Garvey.
Well, I was first brought into the Marcus Garvey movement by the fact that I understood that he was to come and speak to us in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to the meeting, and lo and behold, he didn't come. And we heard that the mayor refused to allow him to come. So we were very incensed about it and got a delegation to go see why. And then it was guaranteed that Marcus Garvey would come the next night. And the hall was packed with people, and everybody went with ammunition.
They had guns?
They had guns. Everybody had guns. Blue Steel, Smith & Wesson's, German Lugers. They had plenty of German Lugers because, you know, the war had boys from the war and everything.
Okay.
And I had two guns with me. And they all had guns and ammunition, a bag of ammunition. Everybody had what you call a suitcase today.
African people throughout the...
We used to call satchels.
What was all this?
Why ammunition.
Why were you so armed?
Because we were afraid the police would stop him from coming again.
Okay.
And we wanted to protect him. And so we went. 3,500 people was in that hall. And so when Garvey came, we applauded very much. And he said, "My friends, I want to apologize for not speaking to you last night. But the reason I didn't speak to you is because the mayor permitted himself to be used as a stooge by the police department to prevent me from speaking to you." And when he said that, the police jumped up and said, "I'll run you in." And when the police did that, everybody jumped up on the benches. We had benches then.
Uh-huh.
And took out their guns straight up. The guns were straight up in the air. "Speak, Garvey, speak." And Garvey said, "And as I was saying," and he went and repeated himself. And the police filed out of there like little puppy dogs with their little tails between their legs and filed out of the hall.
Okay, after which I understand you started a chapter of his organization?
No, I didn't start a chapter. We had a chapter going down there.
Okay. Uh-huh. And you purchased stock in the
Black Star Line, yes.
What was that? What was the Black Star Line?
Black Star Line was ships that Marcus Garvey was buying.
For what purpose?
To go to Africa. To go to Africa and to trade with Africa. He was going to trade with the West Indies and Africa.
And what was the result of the purchase of the ships? Did they ever get to Africa?
No, the people sabotaged the ships. There was great sabotage. You know, on Garvey's board, he had a lot of enemies of our people. You couldn't talk about Africa in those days without expecting the agents to be around you. You had the agents of Belgium, you had the agents of France, you had the agents of England, and all those agents were sitting on his board.
Oh, trying to sabotage his work.
And yes, in the form of black skins.
Okay.
You see? So they sabotaged the ships.
All right.
And then they charged Garvey with fraud because they were saying that he was selling unworthy ships, you know.
How did the work of Marcus Garvey influence your life?
Oh, very much so. Oh, yes, because he taught me about the glories of Africa. I never went to sleep anymore since then. Never. I did much study since then of my own.
On the glories of Africa?
Yes.
You've made numerous trips to Africa.
Yes.
I understand that you recently attended the Women's Conference, the International
yes.
Women's Conference.
Yes, yes.
Tell us about that.
Yes, that was very great. It was very widely attended with 8,000 women.
Okay.
Yes.
During your travels, recent travels to Africa, you went to Ethiopia, I understand.
Yes, I went to Ethiopia.
Did you witness some of the famine?
No, they didn't let us go there. We didn't see anything of the famine. You wouldn't even know they had a famine.
I guess
they kept that from the people.
I guess that's sometimes like people visiting New York never get to see Harlem.
That's right.
They just show you the...
That's right, the part they want you to see. That's right.
You have land in upstate Parksville, I believe it is.
Yes.
It's you have the Mount Addis Ababa.
Mount Addis Ababa.
Okay. And you doing work on that mountain?
Well, we want to build there a college of African studies. We want to build a monument to the 100 million Africans who perished in the slave trade, and for those who died since. All the people who died in the struggle. 100 million. 100 million died in the slave trade, yes.
So that's our Holocaust.
Yes, that's our Holocaust.
Holocaust. All right, this institution that you want to build, the purpose of it will be to educate black people?
Yes, to.
Bid 'em in, get 'em in. That sun is hot and plenty bright. Let's get on to business and get home tonight. Bid 'em in. Auctioning slaves is a real high art. Bring that young gal, Roy. She's good for a start. Bid 'em in, get 'em in. Now here's a real goodbye on about 15. Her great-grandmammy was a die-homie queen. Just look at her face. She sure ain't homely. Like Sheba in the Bible, she's black but comely. Bid 'em in. Gonna start at 3. Can I hear 3? Step up, gents, take a good look-see, because I know you'll want her once you see her. She's young and right, make a darn good breeder. Bid 'em in. She's good in the field, she can sew and cook. Strip her down, Roy, let the gentleman look. She's full up front and ample behind. Examine her teeth if you got a mind. Bid 'em in, get 'em in. Here's a bid of 3 from a man who's thrifty. 325, can I hear 350? Your money ain't earning you much in the banks. Turn around, Roy, let 'em look at her flanks. Bid 'em in. 350's bid and I'm looking for 4. At $400 she's a bargain sure. 4 is the bid, 450. $500 now look alive. Bid 'em in, get 'em in. Don't mind them tears, that's one of her tricks. 550's bid and who'll say 6? She's healthy and strong and well equipped. Make a fine lady's maid when she's properly whipped. Bid 'em in. 6, 650, don't be slow. 7 is the bid, gonna let her go. At seven, she's going, gone. Pull her down, Roy. Bring the next one on. Bid them in, get them in, bid them in. Bid them in, get them in. That sun is hot and plenty bright. Let's get on to business and get home tonight. Bid them in. Auctioning slaves is a real high art. Bring that young gal, Roy. She's good for a start. Bid them in, get them in. Now here's a real good buy on about 15. Her great-grandmammy was a die-homie queen. Just look at her face. She sure ain't homely. Like Sheba in the Bible, she's black but comely. Bid them in. Gonna start at three. Can I hear three? Step up, gents, take a good look-see. Cause I know you'll want her once you see her. She's young and ripe, make a darn good breeder. Bid them in. She's good in the field, she can sew and cook. Strip her down, Roy, let the gentleman look. She's full up front and ample behind. Examine her teeth if you got a mind. Bid them in, get them in. There's a bid of three from a man who's thrifty. 325, can I hear 350? Your money ain't earning you much in the banks. Turn around, Roy, let them look at her flanks. Bid them in. 350's bidding, I'm looking for four. At $400, she's a bargain, sure. Four is the bid, 450. Five, $500, now look alive. Bid them in, get them in. Don't mind them tears, that's one of her tricks. 550's bidding, who'll say six? She's healthy and strong and well-equipped. Make a fine lady's maid when she's properly whipped. Bid them in. Six, 650, don't be slow. Seven is the bid, gonna let her go. At seven, she's going, gone. Pull her down, Roy, bring the next one on. Bid them in, get them in, bid them in.
Shine them on, got to be on in the light.
You're listening to Dire Sports Music on Uhuru Radio. Melinda Francis, Norman Otis Richmond, Lisa Watson on the buttons, and we are have paid tribute to Queen Mother Audley Moore. And Queen Mother Moore was a member of the UNIA as well as a member of the Communist Party. And she formed her own organizations after she was no longer a part of the Garvey organization and the Communist Party. But great woman, like I said, I had the pleasure of meeting Ms. Moore, Queen Mother. And we will see in the whirlwind. Any final thoughts, not final, any parting thoughts, Melinda?
No, I'm excited to see next time. Just tune in next time.
We'll be back on, I guess, April the 9th, because next week there is a convention and we will be preempted, but we will be back on April the 9th, and we will see you in the whirlwind. Thank you for listening.